Welcome to the Goalie Hacks Podcast, the show dedicated to providing elite tips, hacks, and strategies to take your game to the next level, where we help you become an elite goaltender, one hack at a time. And now, here's your host, Mike Santaguida.
Bang, bang, what is up, goalies, and welcome back to the show. And I'm your host, Mike Santaguida, and this is the Goalie Hacks Podcast, and welcome to all our new subscribers to the program. Crazy to just think over 6 weeks ago, we just broke that 1K subscriber milestone. And as of recently, we're already up to 1,400 subscribers now. So almost a 50% increase in subscribers in 6 weeks. We're absolutely rolling on the show right now. We're creeping up on 20K downloads since inception now. And you guys know me, I love expressing gratitude to my community. And just can't tell you how much fun I'm having continuing to produce the show for you guys. I hope you goalies are enjoying it as well. The feedback has come back has been nothing short of phenomenal so far. So thank you to everyone who reached out to let me know what they think of everything we're doing. And just want to let you all know I appreciate everyone who tunes in or supports any of my other work in any way. It truly means the world to me. So we got a big show overall coming in the next month or so. Going to be sprucing up the production significantly and pouring a bunch of money into making the program an even better experience for you guys. So only the best for the Goalie Hacks community, and we will continue to improve and level up the production and the program as we continue our journey together. This week on the program, I'm joined by another active professional goaltender, former NCAA D1 college hockey leader, and now American League starter for the Grand Rapids Griffins and the Detroit's AHL farm team, Kevin Boyle. And Kevin has an amazing story of overcoming adversity throughout his career, getting overlooked and people doubting him, and now fast forwarding to his massive success all the way up to playing and winning games at the NHL level. And Kevin is a super down-to-earth, salt-of-the-earth guy who just gets it. He understands his identity and what makes him good, and he stays true to that, and that's allowed him to find tons of success at the next level. So can't wait for you guys to hear this one. It was just an amazing conversation. I know you goalies are going to love it, so make sure to stick around at the end of the show to catch all the details. And shout out to my patrons and all the members of my Inner Circle Mentorship Program. And just honestly, huge shout out to all my members at this point. Everyone that has been willing to push that subscribe button and put their faith in me to help take their game to the next level, move their careers forward. Just thank you all so much for being a part of this program that, quite frankly, has grown into something very special. And everyone who's joined the program has seen some type of success joining, either on the mental or play development side of things or the recruiting side of things. So just so happy everyone is happy, and so happy everyone's leveling up their game and continuing to move their careers forward as best and efficiently as possible. The whole point of the program was to really give back, right? Give back and be a guide and a mentor to show you guys what it really takes and how you can get to that next level faster. And I figured this mentorship program would be pretty awesome for all the young guys trying to make their way as well. I wish I had a resource like this when I was kind of coming up. We pioneered it and had to figure it out on our own. But I never imagined it evolved into something this big and this big this quick. With over 20 members now in, just about 9-10 months. So I'm having so much fun hanging out with like-minded individuals and working together to move everyone's career forward. So if you're interested in catapulting your development, becoming more consistent, having better performances to give you better odds of getting to the next level, getting access to all the shortcuts and secrets on how you can get to the next level faster, then I strongly recommend you consider joining our 20 other members and fast tracking your development to get to the next level quicker. And we offer a private group chat where we talk about ideas, concepts, current news, gear, etc. You name it. We have polls. It's an opportunity to hang out with like-minded individuals where we push each other and work together to develop, as well as get instant and priority access to communication with me as well through the private group chat app. We also offer tons of other perks, including video review, 1v1 phone calls where I take you through the whole Goalie Hacks development system to increase your performance, consistency, and results, and find a great opportunity on the recruiting side of things to keep moving your career forward. So we also offer new tiers for in-person analysis, including game analysis, in-person off-ice sessions, and private on-ice sessions for local Greater Toronto Area individuals as well. So if any of this interests you, just head to patreon.com/goaliehacks or head to the link in the episode description to get all the details and have an opportunity to get started today. And shout out to our other main sponsor, NeuroTracker. And as of recently, we specifically designed and introduced Goalie Hacks protocols and new programs that allow you to isolate and work on specifically different areas of your game that you otherwise can't pinpoint well on the ice. Everybody's loving the program so far. The feedback has been phenomenal. It's very challenging for everybody, and they're loving it. They're feeling the difference on the ice, which is the most important. But with over 60-plus clinical case studies done, the NeuroTracker X is the most scientifically proven high-performance training tool on the market right now. Proven to help you get better and increase your results in a number of different areas, including peripheral awareness, peripheral multiple object tracking, hockey IQ, reaction speed, working memory, and the list of the benefits goes on. So if you're looking to get an edge today where most people aren't looking right now, and if you're looking to stay sharp, honestly, while you're in shutdown right now, that was kind of why I introduced this partnership back in the spring, and it seems like we're kind of heading back into that. The slow period with hockey right now. It's a great option to do it from home. You could do it whenever you want, wherever you want, as often as you want. So the accessibility is just incredible. So if you're interested, head to the link in the show notes or in my Instagram bio. I got a review there as well on my Instagram bio of the product. But head to the website to check out the full details on how to get started today. But without further ado, let's jump right into this week's conversation. I know you're going to love the chat Kevin and I had today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Goalie Hacks podcast. And I'm super excited today to be joined by another active professional goaltender, current AHL starter and former NCAA Division I leader, Kevin Boyle. And Kevin spent his minor hockey days playing in the New Jersey club circuit, getting drafted by the Tri-City Storm in the USHL and the Sioux Greyhounds in the OHL in 2008. And in 2010, he decided to go play in the BCHL on the west coast of Canada, where he inked a Division I commitment and offer to UMass Amherst for the following season. He spent his first two seasons of college hockey with the Minutemen before sitting out a year in 13-14 and transferred to the UMass Little River Hawks, also in Hockey East. And after racking up more than 110 college games played, he then went on to have a breakout season in his senior year of college, winning tons of personal accolades before signing his first pro contract in 2015-16 with the San Diego Gulls in the Anaheim Ducks organization. And he made his NHL debut in 2018-19, playing 5 games at the NHL level, and has since racked up more than 130 pro games with more than 120 games at the American League level, over 20 at the ECHL level, and as of recently signing the American League with the Grand Rapids Griffins in the Detroit Red Wings organization. He's had just a tremendous amount of success at the next level and has just an inspiring story that shows the true meaning of resilience. And I couldn't be happier to have him on today. Kevin, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for coming on the show, man.
I'm doing fantastic. Appreciate you having me on here. And that was a hell of an intro right there. Brought me back to the good old days. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've accomplished a lot, and I like to give guys that, you know, you're willing to take the time to come on the show, and I appreciate that a ton. I know everybody in the audience will, and shout out to your brother-in-law, George Bozak, for putting me in touch with you. So thanks, George.
He actually just left my house this morning. He came. He was up here visiting this past weekend.
Yeah, he's a good guy, man. And you actually heard our episode together, right?
I did. Yeah, I listened to it. It was a good one.
Yeah, right on, man. Well, I always love bringing on coaches and goaltenders on the next level to really shine some light on, you know, what it really takes to find success at the highest levels in hockey. But I hope you're doing well, obviously. And I'm just curious how things kind of been during COVID and what's the plan for the start of the year, hopefully soon here.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind with everything, because it's just a bunch of unknowns. Even nowadays, still, it's just a bunch of unknowns for us. So it's kind of been a battle in that sense. But, you know, it's my job, so I got to stay ready and stay healthy. So just been trying to do that and keep my mind a little sane.
Yeah, sounds like everybody's kind of getting a little chomping at the bit here, obviously, to get started. What have you been doing exactly in terms of training?
Yeah, so I just had a baby. She's like,
oh, no way. Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. She's 2.5 months old. So, I haven't been able, like working out wise, I've been doing most of my stuff here at home. I have like a program, but I've been trying to limit my exposure, obviously, because of her, my little one. So I've been doing a lot of my training here at home. I've been also been going to, there's a junior team around here who's got a gym that they opened up for me. So I've been using that as well.
Nice.
And then recently, about a month ago, I started going back down to Lowell to skate. So I do that 2 to 3 times a week now, just to stay in good, on ice shape. And, you know, once I find out more about when, like, concrete, when I'm going to have to leave, it'll be more of a kickstart then. But right now I'm just, you know, keeping my feet under me, keeping my body loose and everything like that. So it's been going nice. Well, but
yeah. You're going to skate with the Riverhawks?
I am. Yeah. But it's not, so I can't go skate with their team. I originally started doing that, but I guess I'm not allowed to do that anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that NCAA regulation, or?
I'm honestly not sure if it's NCAA, if it's a Massachusetts thing. I'm not sure. I didn't ask Norm too much about it, because
yeah,
I know he's in hot water with everything going on. So,
right.
But yeah, I went down and I practiced with the team one time, and then the next day, because I was supposed to come back and do it that was my plan.
Right.
And he called me and he was like, "Hey, you're more than welcome to come down and skate like after we're done, but you're not allowed to be on the ice with the team anymore." So, but I go down there, one of my buddies who I played with, I don't know, Dylan Zink, do you remember the name?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so sure. he just got a job. He's working with them as like kind of a hockey ops type guy, and he just playing this past year. So he's still fresh. He's hopping out with me, and we're just pretty much just doing goalie drills right now, which is it's about as good as I can get at the moment. But
yeah, I think everybody's sort of trying to make do right now. So yeah, it's turning into the weirdest year in hockey probably ever, right? So you just got to kind of roll with the punches, I guess. But you know, I hope you guys can obviously get started soon. I know some guys were saying the AHL announced a start. I think the NHL announced like beginning of January because of Christmas. And then I'm sure AHL will go probably like a few weeks or a month after, or something like that, right?
I hope so. I heard the last I heard AHL had their start for February 5th.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So that, I mean, my guess would be the NHL will probably get pushed back to February 1st, I would assume, because usually the two leagues start around the same time.
Right, right.
The NHL a couple days earlier. But I mean, it's a weird time. So what you're hearing is what I'm hearing too. So
yeah, no kidding. It's the broken telephone, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a weird time, but gotta make the most of it.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck sort of as the season gets underway with your training. Congrats on your kid. We're obviously in a little bit of a time crunch, so I kind of want to jump right in because we have a lot to go over.
Of course.
You know, I mentioned earlier that you just have an awesome story, and talking to George as well, he had some amazing things to say about you, and obviously your resume speaks for itself. But you know, maybe you can just start off by briefly sharing a bit of you know, your story and your background a little bit deeper, and sort of how we got to where we are today.
Yeah. I mean, I could ramble on about my story for hours. I think it's a good one for young kids coming up too, because it's not a story of like it was not easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like you said, I grew up in New Jersey. Growing up in New Jersey, I was never a top name or anything like that. I was getting cut from district teams, festival teams, left and right.
Mm-hmm.
But I always knew that there was something there, and I mean, George was pretty much the biggest advocate for that. And I ended up, so I played juniors in New Jersey, played for the Rockets for 3 years. And that's where I ended up getting my commitment to UMass Amherst. I think I was like 15. I was still playing junior B hockey.
Wow. I didn't know that. Incredible.
Yeah. I was 15 years old. And I was playing junior B, and UMass Amherst, their coaching staff came and they found me pretty early. And then, I mean, it was kind of a whirlwind. Junior hockey in New Jersey wasn't great. It was okay for me, not great. So that's why I thought it'd be a good idea to take a year off and go somewhere else, kind of get out on my own and go live in British Columbia, which was the greatest thing for me. It helped me grow up a lot before going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got to Amherst. I was 19. Ended up, I was getting put in a good situation right away where I could play right away. And ended up kind of splitting time my first 2 years, and then the coach, our coach my freshman year, he got fired and a new coach came in my sophomore year. And we kind of just like didn't see eye to eye on a lot of different things, and it felt like he always had it out for me where and then I was still battling, I was still trying to play, and we still, I think I still played the most games out of any goalie that year.
Right.
And then, you know, like these new coaches do, sometimes they come in after the year was over. I thought I was going to play 4 years at Amherst. He came in and he was like, hey, no offense, but you got to get out of here.
Wow. Yeah. Just blunt, eh?
Yeah, just, I mean, it was very blunt. And it was, that's a whole nother story that I could go into for a very long time where it was, it wasn't like a heartfelt, you know what, you've been here, you've worked hard. It was more like, I don't like not, what.
Like, saying you're not welcome, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I said that to him. I was like, hey, like when you first got here, it just felt like you just didn't like me. And he literally looked me in the face and he was like, you're right.
And wow.
At that point, I didn't even know what to say because I'd never been told that before.
Right.
My whole life. So at that point, I got up and I walked out. I was like, I got nothing else to say to you then. Like,
yeah.
And that was a time where I was on a full ride. I could have stayed in school and I could have went to school for free because we ended up battling it out with like the board at UMass, and they granted me, they were like, he can't just tell you to leave. Like he has to honor the commitment. So I could have stayed there. And I thought about it for a while. It took me probably a month to decide whether I wanted to just be a normal kid and play or go to school and do that, or if I wanted to keep playing hockey. And obviously I decided to keep on keeping on here. And I was lucky enough that Lowell came pretty quick and that all happened pretty fast. So I owe everything to them. And obviously the story kind of writes itself after I went to Lowell. That was the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. So I can't say enough about them and that program they have there. They'll be like their coach there came to my wedding, their assistant coaches or someone, like I wouldn't even call them coaches. I'd call them friends.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, how did you kind of, maybe you can dive a bit into not necessarily like what transpired with that coach and kind of that negative, you know, event, but how did you kind of get past that and get over like him not wanting you? Did it make you doubt yourself? And then how did you kind of build your confidence back up after that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. It's hard not to at that point, you know, you're in a position where I've played, I knew I could play at that level, and then someone comes in and pretty much tell you can't, like,
yeah,
it definitely eats at you. And it did for a while. I was kind of in a dark place there for a while, but I sat back and I was lucky enough. I have a great family that just supports me like 100%.
Yeah.
And they were like, can you see yourself not playing hockey right now? Like, do you think you gave it your all? And I was like, I think I've worked hard, but I think there's still more for me to do. And I think that there's more achievements that I think I could possibly reach for, because I know I've been there and I know I can do it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard and it's a tough thing on the mind. And I thought what was even harder was the redshirt year at Lowell, when you're going in and you're practicing games, or you're just like practicing, like practice is pretty much your games that. And then you're practicing 4 or 5 times a week, and then you have to sit and watch on the weekends. Like, that's tough.
Yeah.
But if you have the right mindset, sometimes those years can be the best thing for you. Get in the right physical shape to be at the top of your game, and you get in the right mental shape to get in to be at the top of your game. So
yeah.
It was tough, but looking back on it, that like what happened to me there was the best thing that possibly could have happened to me.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Yeah. So for some kids out there who might be experiencing some, you know, relatively similar, I guess, short-term downturn, what's some advice that, you know, you can give to them to deal with like coaches that don't necessarily like people in particular? You can't make everybody happy, I guess. Right. So what's your advice to them to kind of have confidence in themselves and have that self-awareness to know that you can play and then keep chasing and try and move on?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of simple and you might laugh, but it's like you have these dreams, like don't let anyone stand in your way.
Yeah.
If you have these dreams of playing professional hockey, playing Division I hockey, and someone comes and tells you that you can't, like, who are they to tell you that you can't do something?
Yeah.
Who is someone else to tell you that you can't do something? If you put your mind to something and really put your all into it, there's not anyone else out there that can tell you you can't do it. The only person that is going to tell you that you can't do it is yourself. And if mm-hmm. you have that, like, having those self-doubts are never good. You always have to have that self-confidence in yourself to know that you are going to do everything in your power to, one, prove these people wrong, because in your mind, you know that these people are wrong. Mm-hmm. One, you have to prove them wrong, and then you have to prove to yourself that you can do it.
Mm-hmm. And there's no greater feeling than when somebody tells you you can't, and then you kind of push through that and you're resilient, and then you prove to yourself that you prove to them and yourself. There's no greater feeling than that, right?
Exactly. There's no greater feeling than having that self-confidence and self-respect for yourself and doing something when someone tells you that you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I you know, and you mentioned you grew up playing in the New Jersey AAA circuit. But kind of in your opinion, looking back on your minor hockey career, what do you think is sort of the most important skill that young kids should be developing at a young age while they play minor hockey?
Ooh, that's tough. you know, in my mind, in all honesty, I think that people nowadays are kind of, I think honestly, they're taking it a little bit too seriously at a young age.
Right.
I think growing up, playing hockey, playing travel hockey with all your friends that you've grown up with, like, you need to just treat it as a game and go out and have fun. Like, all these people and parents are so worried about pushing their kids to the next level at such a young age that they forget that it's just a game and it's just a sport. And I think that's some advice that you could even give to older people nowadays,
mm-hmm.
is that you got to remember, This is a sport. You're supposed to have fun with it. And when you stop having fun with it and treating it more like a business instead of a game, I think that's when things start going south a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw you got drafted, by the Tri-City Storm, and the Sioux Greyhounds actually, but you had an opportunity to play in the league at 16 years old. So kind of looking back at that experience, you know, what was sort of the biggest surprise for you when you tried to make that jump to tier one junior at such a young age?
So I went out to Tri-City. I think I played in a game when I was 16. They called me up for like a, I don't know, Tri-City was, when I got drafted there, they were like really bad. Like that year, I think you could probably look it up. They maybe won like 4 or 5 games. Like, it was,
yeah. Crazy. Was that their like inaugural season back then?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went out there for a weekend, and there was 3 games on the weekend. It was 2 games Friday, Saturday, and then on Sunday they were playing Fargo, who ended up making the Clark Cup final that year. And so I watched. I didn't dress for the game Friday, Saturday, because I was just supposed to be there for a week just to practice with the team and kind of like get my feet wet in the organization.
Right.
And so I watched them play Saturday or Friday and Saturday, and they lost both games. Like, I'm not even joking. It was like 9-2. Like,
oh, man.
Absolutely destroyed. So then, like, after the game on Saturday, they come in, they're like, you're playing. And I'm like staying in a hotel with my mom. Like, I have no idea what's going on. We go out and are playing the first place team in the division. We end up, I think we lost like 3-2 or something like that.
And yeah.
I played pretty well. But they didn't want me to keep me there. They wanted me to come back and like play games and stuff like that. But it was cool to get out there for a weekend. It was kind of, that was another thing where you're playing, like, I was playing junior B, maybe some junior A games at that point in New Jersey. And I went out to the top junior league and I played a game. And like, that was another reason, like, that I kind of realized that, you know what, I can actually do something with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, nothing. I went to camp with Tri-City the next year, and they were kind of like, yeah, we have another guy coming in, because they had just got new management. We have another guy coming in who we want to play. So if you want to come here, like, you'd probably be the backup. And I was like, at that point, I was already committed. So, and they were like, we don't really want you to do that. We have this place out in Columbia that you can go to, and you can be the starter and be the guy and get the time that you need. So it kind of made it a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, you gotta get games, right?
I also, like, going back to Sioux Greyhounds, I almost went the major junior route, because when after they drafted me, to keep my NCAA eligibility, you can only go there for, I want to say it's 48 hours. So I went there, and they had a kid, Andy Isles, who was drafted. I was drafted in like the 15th round, like last round.
Oh, yeah.
And this kid was, he was supposed to be like their guy. And I went to their, like, they had like a rookie camp or something like that. And
Andy Isles, wasn't he with Cornell?
Yeah, he was. And like,
yeah, I remember him.
USA team and all that stuff.
Yeah, he was sick.
Yeah, he was unreal. but so I went to the, like, to that camp for 48 hours, and they wanted me to come back the next week and, like, go to their main camp. Like, they wanted me to be, like, on their team. And I, like, obviously at that point I had to decide whether I wanted to do that or go the college route. And my family's always been big on education, so
yeah,
couldn't pass that to everyone.
Is that kind of what tipped the scales a bit? You were more focused on from an education standpoint? Like, what was going through your head when you were trying to decide?
Yeah, I mean, at such a young age, I didn't, like, at that point, I wasn't thinking about pro hockey or anything like that.
Right,
I was
more
thinking about, like, I want to play hockey as long as I possibly can. God forbid something happens, or maybe I don't make it. Like, I need to have something to back that up. So I want to get a good U.S. education. And my parents definitely, I think they definitely swayed me that way, just because they're big on education. And they've kind of instilled those values in me. So it was an easy, not easy decision.
Yeah. Well, do you look back on it and think, obviously things have worked out pretty well, but you kind of happy with the road that kind of transpired following that decision?
You know, it's easy to look back on things and like knowing I made it now. So I was, and like, it's easy to think I could have been maybe playing pro like years earlier.
Right. But
also thinking about it, I think for my development, I think I was more of a late bloomer than, like, if you put me in an NHL training camp when I was 19 years old, I would have been lost. Like, lost. So I think,
yeah.
I think those years to have me grow up and mature, I think those were, they were paramount for me.
Yeah. And then I guess maybe for people listening who are, everybody's always, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, about like having fun and like enjoying the journey. You know, it's not so about the destination. If you kind of have fun along the way, focus on your development, you know, good things happen. So what's some advice maybe that you have for people listening that are in like such a rush to really get to that next level, get to the NHL level, even if they might not be ready yet?
I mean, biggest advice I could give is, like, what is your rush? Why do you need to hinder your development to get somewhere now when you can develop even more and get there a year or two from now?
Yeah.
You really think that much, like, that year or two is going to make, like, I think that year or two for you to develop into a more mature, not only hockey player, but more mature human being. I think those years are huge, and it's tough now too, because I mean, pro hockey is getting younger by the year.
Yeah.
You have these people who are 18 years old coming in and playing right away. Like, that's tough, and it's got to be tough for them too. Because, like, 18 year olds, they're not as mature as, say, like a 25 year old.
No.
So they're going
to start enough in college to go in as a true freshman.
Exactly. And now they're trying to make 18 year olds come in and play professional hockey right away. Like, it's kind of crazy, but.
Well, you don't see much of it going on with like goalies though, eh?
No, yeah. I think goalies is different. Obviously there's those outliers like Hart and everything like that who are wise beyond their years, but I mean goalies are kind of an enigma. You never know. Like, you could have a goalie who's 36 years old, been playing for a while, could play in like Europe or Russia, like journeyman, and he could just figure it out at 35 years old and come in and be incredible. Like a Tim Thomas.
Even Anton Khudobin is he's right up there. Reminds me of him, eh?
Exactly. And it's just not like goalies are so unpredictable. And I think for a goalie, having that like that mental maturity in your game, I think is huge.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, some kids they have that, but I don't think that's something that's necessarily taught or something that's that's like you can learn. It's just something like I said, Hart, I think he just gets it, man. And yeah, it's not something that a coach has told him. It's just like how he is.
Right.
But
right.
Not every goalie is going to be like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, but in 2010, not long after you went to play in the BCHL, you know, you had a great season there being named to the BCHL rookie team. But looking back for you and playing a full season of you know, tier two junior there, what was sort of the hardest part about transitioning to junior hockey and being able to compete and have success at that level?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest part of that was growing up and being out on my own. Mm-hmm. I've been playing in New Jersey my whole life growing up. I had my parents driving me everywhere. So this was really like a year for me to grow up and get stronger and like realize what life was like without like being at home with my parents,
right,
from home life, and kind of force yourself to grow up. And looking back, and I think that was the biggest thing. I didn't have my parents being like, oh, you should be doing this. Oh, you should be doing that. You have a game this day.
Right.
It's all just you. And it forces you to grow up a little bit, which is, I think, is huge.
Yeah. So for kids also, and maybe pertaining to kind of the on-ice play, you know, what do you think is like a really important skill to develop that, you know, will help kids make an easier transition when they finally get to junior hockey?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, especially for me, I've noticed is like being calm, but having mm-hmm. that calmness and poise, but also still having that edge to your game.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a fine line for that, because you can be way too calm very easily, and you can be way too like sharp very easily, where that it takes away from your calmness. But I think the biggest thing, like as you go up levels, is showing and having that confidence and poise, like so that you show the team in front of you, like it kind of calms them down, you know?
Yeah.
And like when you see me juggling rebounds and kind of scrambling like so much that I don't have myself in the net, that's when you know something's wrong.
And the guys on the bench too are like, oh God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And coaches like, get him out of the net. but yeah, I think that poise and the calmness, and that correlates to being confident also. And I always go back to that self-confidence that also changes from goalie to goalie, like how calm and how poised you are in net. It changes from each person. But I think that's the biggest thing. If you can control a game and make it look easy, where it might not feel easy, but if you can make it look easy, I think that gives your team and the coaches like a boatload of confidence in you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were really good at that, actually. I remember playing against you. You're just constantly, like, no matter what happened, very calm, never too high, never too low, and just gave the team such kind of quiet confidence. How did you kind of develop that over the years, or like focus on that?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. It's something like that's just how I've always been, like my whole life, is that I'm not outspoken. I'm not going to be the loudest guy on the ice, but I'll just like, I'll go in and I'll stop pucks and go back and joke around with you afterwards. It's just like, it's just kind of how I've been pretty much my whole life. And I think when I'm not playing good hockey, I think it's because I get away from that. And I'm not like, I'm so worried about what's going on around me instead of worried about like myself, that I get a little bit crazy, and it kind of affects my game negatively. So,
Yeah. Well, you know, the following two seasons after that, you spent at UMass Amherst, and you did get tons of playing time during your first 2 years, but I'm just curious, kind of, you know, making that transition to college hockey, what was the hardest part about sort of the quality and play like that? I know everybody kind of has a hard time with the school and managing the life, but in terms of like the quality of hockey, like where did you have to make the biggest adjustment?
Yeah, I think as you go up levels, like college to, or junior to college to pro, I think everything is just, it's just a step faster, a step crisper, and a step quicker. It's like you just have to kind of realize that, like, so you have, you go juniors, like you play juniors, and you'll have the top two lines be good players that are going to move on to the like Division One, and then you have mm-hmm. other guys who are either playing like just because they love the game and probably won't play after that, or they're going to go like Canadian college or something like that.
Right.
Whereas you get to Division One, like every single one of these kids was a scorer on their junior team, like put up points and like all produced. Like it was all top line guys on your junior
yeah.
team. Obviously you have to be sharp and you can't take like a second off.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, it, I think that gets magnified as you go up. So you go from juniors to college, you have fourth liners in college who were putting up 70, 80 points in juniors.
Yeah.
And you go from college to pros and you have fourth liners in pros that put up 110 points in like the OHL. So like you, it just, it makes it more, so you have to be ready at every single second.
Yeah.
You go up.
The margin of error is just way slimmer, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, that's, it's, yeah, guys hit their spots. The game's a little bit quicker. You got to be able to get your feet set a little bit faster, read the yeah. play more, because if you're kind of behind it, you get roasted, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's a thing that I've kind of naturally been gifted at, is that I think, like, I personally feel that I read the game quicker than what my body does.
Yeah.
So, yeah. like, I'll know a guy is going to shoot somewhere, or I'll know a guy is going to make a pass or make a play to this thing before he even knows he's going to do it.
Right.
And it's, like, it's kind of weird to say, but like I was thinking about that last week, and I was
yeah.
going over, I was watching some things, and I was like, I knew this guy was going to do that before he even got to the blue line.
Right.
Just
right.
like seeing where everyone is around the ice and knowing different things. Like I knew he was going to do that.
Yeah.
And that's, well, like, that's hard to teach.
Well, they say that that's what separates pros from amateurs, is their anticipation and their ability to kind of read cues, right?
Yeah.
But that just takes repetition, like over the years, and yeah. seeing just so many different pucks and so many different releases and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, after two seasons at Amherst, obviously you sat out a year, but you decided to transfer to Lowell. And, you know, and you had two breakout seasons after that with the Riverhawks, but in your senior year in particular, you're named Hockey's Goaltender of the Year, Player of the Year, Tournament MVP, All-Tournament Second, All-Star Team, New England NCAA D1 All-Star, and to the Three Stars Award as well for that season. Obviously, just an amazing personal breakout season for you, and I'm sure it felt really good considering what transpired beforehand. But I guess looking back at it all, what do you think kind of contributed so much to your personal success that season?
I think it was a mix of a lot of things. I think one, so our assistant that we had at Lowell, Cam Ellsworth, he's now the head coach at Norwich.
Mm.
This guy, he, like, when I say a goalie guru without being a goalie guru, like, that's what he is. He knows, he just understands the game.
Yeah.
And like talking about the game, and he just gets it. He knows exactly what to tell you to do in like certain situations to make you play your best. And I owe a lot of that to him. He's become one of my best friends, and he's helped me out a ton. And I think it was also a mix of getting there. My redshirt year, the goalie at Lowell was Connor Hellebuck, just won the Vezina.
Yeah,
like one of the best goalies in the world. So I got to sit there and watch him every single day in practice and games, and just like kind of learn that. And that's like,
yeah.
I've always been more of a visual learner. So you can tell me to do something, but then if you show me how to do it, it's like I can pick it up pretty quick.
Yeah.
So like watching him that year helped me out a lot. And then it was just kind of more maturity from my junior year, where my junior year was kind of, it was up and down a little bit. I had my games where was good, and I had my games that were really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of just learning from that. And that's why I think I was more of a late bloomer with that maturity side to my game.
Yeah. Yeah. And your coach there, what was maybe like one or two things that you think he taught you that kind of really clicked for you in terms of piecing it all together?
Yeah. So he taught me that fine line between being calm and poised and being razor sharply focused. And he taught me how to kind of rein in my what's the right word here? My jitters. Yeah, like my emotions and my jitterness. Taught me how to rein that in and turn it into a positive thing so that I'm sitting here and I'm calm, like I'm making a save. I'm sharply focused on everything. But when I make the save, it's just like, oh, okay, it just hit me. And it made the game so much slower and it made the game so much easier for me. That's probably that. And the thing that George was talking to you about when he was on here, controlling the game and really hammering down, getting my stick on pucks. If something hits me in the chest or the arms, like it's going to glue to me, it's not going to go right anywhere. So it would turn a 35, 40 shot game into a 23 shot. Like you barely broke a sweat.
Yeah. 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 Well, I'm just curious for the process. I liked that you're kind of diving into that a little bit. Maybe you can detail a bit how, you know, your coach showed you and taught you that process of reeling it in, like what's sort of your process during big games and everything like that to, you know, either anchor techniques or something that you do, like what's your system, your process to really reel that in?
Yeah. So when it came to like technical aspects and actually like being a goalie, we did a lot of repetition work and it was a lot of very boring stuff. So we would go out and we'd skate, you know, you'd practice Monday to Thursday, play Friday. We'd go out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and 30 minutes before practice every day, we would do the same drills every single day. Like start on your post, come up to a guy who's, and these guys are like, they're not shooting to score or anything. They're standing on the top of the circles. You're coming out, getting square. They're firing it low pad. You get your stick on it. And you try to deflect it, like, not into the glass. You're trying to deflect it into the netting to get a stoppage of play.
Yeah.
So you would do that, try to deflect it up, and then you'd follow it back to, like, normally it would be your post because you want to put it in the corner. Follow it to the post and then come up to the other top of the circle, and a guy would just fire it in your gut.
Yeah.
And you just need to keep it. And we did that every single day. So when it came into the time in a game, someone shooting at far pad, like it's just muscle memory at that point that you're getting right on it, and you knew where it was going and everything like that.
Yeah.
That was more muscle memory. And it's just pure repetitions to the point where, like I said, you get in a game, you know, like if this thing is hitting you here, you're going to keep it. If this thing's hitting you at this point in your pad or on your stick, you know exactly where it's going because you did it thousands of times before. And I think that helped out a lot.
Yeah.
That kind of like goes into being able to rein in your emotions because you have that confidence. Like you're going through practice and doing all these things. You're not getting scored on. So you have that confidence. You're like, wow, I'm a damn good goalie. I didn't get scored on today. So you just like, it kind of just gives you that confidence going into the weekend, knowing that like you're going to stop these shots.
Yeah. You think that's important part of kind of preparation throughout the week is give you something that can kind of pump your tires a little bit.
I do. Yeah. I think especially early in the week, like for guys who are practicing 3 days a week and then playing games on weekends, I think that's huge. I think the first couple days should be pure, just like getting your confidence in and just like doing the same exact things, feeling the puck so that when you get into these games, it's just like, it's second nature to you at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. You're building that, basically you're working on that muscle memory so much, it becomes subconscious so that way you don't have to think about it when you get to the game.
Exactly. And obviously in games, there's going to be times where you just have to rely on like your natural ability and kind of just scramble and be an athlete at some point.
Yeah.
If you can reduce those amount of times that you have to do that by controlling the game, it makes, like I said, it brings those 35 shot games down to 23 shots. One, it saves your energy a ton, not only physically, but mentally also. You're still physically sharp. You're mentally sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes everything seem easier around you. And that is what brings that calmness and poise into light.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well articulated. Big fan of the repetition style. I think everybody's kind of got to work that into their game a little bit somehow. Right.
Yeah. It's not like obviously you're going to do other drills that are going to be more scenario based, but if you have these repetitions that like, that's the strongest foundation I think that you can get for a goalie is just doing those repetitions and being able to control the game in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to be solid on the foundation, not the foundational aspects of just stopping the ones you're really supposed to stop. Right. And then kind of being able to go outside that box a bit, like you kind of mentioned, when you have to battle a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so following your graduation, you signed with the San Diego Gulls in the AHL, and that season you also played a bunch of ECHL games. But you experienced just a tons of success as a rookie, which is just great. So congrats, man. But, where exactly did you have to make sort of the biggest adjustment? What was kind of the hardest part about transitioning to pro from college?
I think, the biggest transition from pro to college or college to pro, I think is like, you obviously get in a routine in college. And this isn't even really talking about hockey at this point. It's more like you have that routine in college where you're every single day you're doing class and like you're busy all the time. When you get to pro, it's pretty much like you go to the rink from 8, 9 o'clock in the morning and you're done at 12, 12:30, 1 o'clock. So like, and that's it. And then you have the whole rest of the day to do whatever the heck you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you, at that point, you have to get yourself kind of in a routine to make sure that when those games come around, like you're ready for them.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to keep your mind at ease.
Yeah.
And not let it wander too much with all the downtime that you have. But I mean, hockey wise, I don't personally, I didn't think there was that much of a difference in a jump from college to pro. I think college-wise, it was very more fundamental hockey, and it was still really good hockey, but there were there were systems for everything, and those teams, they crack down on those systems like all the time. When you get to pro, especially like playing in the coast, to start my rookie year, like the coach really isn't going over systems too much. He'll throw up a forecheck and be like, "Yeah, 1-2-2, like go do it."
Yeah.
It's not like you're really working on it that much. So the game's a lot more free flowing. But I think college, like the brand of college hockey correlates to NHL hockey way more.
Mm.
Like I think playing in the NHL is way easier especially for a goalie than playing in the AHL and two, the East Coast. I think being a goalie in the East Coast is it's tough, man.
Yeah. You guys walking down Broadway all game.
Yeah. Like I remember one game my rookie year I was in Utah, we were playing Idaho, and I'm not even joking you, I had 7 breakaways in the first period.
Did you stop them all?
I think we lost the game 2-1 or something like that.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. But it was like, wow, I'm actually like, you need to be at the top of your game, and that forces you, like those kind of games forces you to use that like athletic instincts that you have, because there's so much like backdoor plays and people going on, like things going on behind you that you have to worry about more than you did in college and more than you did when you get up to like the AHL and the NHL.
Yeah. There's basically just like more scoring chances in minor pro, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, diving into your NHL debut a bit, back in 2018, you played 5 games and played spectacular, as a matter of fact, you know, putting up a 9-2-1 save percentage and a 2.17 goals against average, just awesome. But, you know, you kind of dive into a bit of like what the NHL level is like, and maybe you can just kind of, you know, detail it a bit more. And then, you know, obviously you had a lot of success there, but what was sort of the biggest difference making that transition to the NHL level that you had to kind of adjust on?
Yeah, I think, like I was saying, I think like playing in the NHL is way easier than playing in the AHL. And it's like, it's for the fact that like these guys in the NHL, these are the best hockey players in the world. So most of the time, like, you pretty much just have to worry about what's going on in front of you. And you know, like, most of the time, if there's a guy on the back door or something like that, he's most of the time going to be covered. And if he's not covered, like, you're going to realize that and know that he's not covered. So you're going to be able to read it a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I think the NHL is pretty much college hockey just on a way bigger scale. It's like college hockey times 100, where, like, it's the same brand of hockey, but these players in the NHL, like, they're the best players in the world. So it's going to be quicker. It's going to be crisper and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like playing in the system that Lowell had, it was a very defensive system. I think playing like that got me really ready to put, like, for my debut in the NHL. And I was I was lucky enough so that my debut in the NHL wasn't my first start. So when it came time to my first start, I had that. I think I played two periods in my debut in Philly. Like, I had that to look back on.
Yeah.
And that was something where, like, for that debut, I was kind of just, like, thrown into a dumpster fire. I just flew into Philly the night before, like, was not expecting to play at all. And then Chad Johnson goes in, and we're down 4-0 after the first period. And the coach comes in and is like, "Hey, you're going in."
Oh, man. It's always brutal. It's always after the worst travel nights, too.
Exactly. I flew from San Diego all the way to Philadelphia.
And, like, jet lag and everything.
Exactly. And it gave me, like, it forced me to not think about it so much. And I kind of just, like, I was like, holy crap, I'm going in. Excuse my language. Like, I'm just going to play. And we were already down 4-0 at that point, so I wasn't worried about, like, letting a goal in or anything like that. I was just going out and, like, enjoying the moment, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that like, being able to do that helped me out a ton for when my first start happened, because I knew that I was like, oh, I went out and I played really well. Like, I can do this, you know?
Yeah, builds that self-confidence.
Exactly.
What was something that in that first start, like, you kind of picked up in terms of experience of, like, what to expect the next time you went out?
That's a great question. That's a tough question.
I like to dig.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, it's just like, you have to be on every second of the game.
Yeah.
And, like, especially when the puck is coming into your zone, like, you got to be not just, like, you can't be 99% on, you got to be 100% dialed in to what's going on.
Yeah.
Because the stage is so much greater, and everything you do, that, like you said, that margin of error is so high. If I went and I let up 4 goals, like, my chance of getting back and playing another game are probably pretty slim.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that you're physically sharp and you're mentally sharp for the full 60 minutes of that game. And it could be even more. It could be 65 minutes. But you can, like, you have to be dialed in at every second and not take a second off.
Yeah. So is there anything that you do to kind of train your focus or anything like that away from the rink or on the ice in particular?
So I've been pretty good at recently, since I've turned pro, probably after my rookie year, I've done a lot of mental work with our, we had a sports psychologist that I did a lot of things with her, and we kind of just found a foundation of, like, my mental state, where I am and what I think about and, like, what's going on in my head to where I play my best hockey. And we found out, like, what it was, and we've kind of just been, like, cracking down on that.
Mm.
So where I'm at my best is, I'm, like I said before earlier, is I'm not treating it as a business. I'm not treating, like, playing hockey, being in the NHL, I'm not treating that as a job. I'm treating it as I'm going out and having fun. I'm playing a sport. Like, I'm playing a game for a living. Like, how does you can't beat this.
No.
So why would I then, if I'm going to go out and have fun and do this, why would I stress myself out with the what ifs?
And
kind of just go out there, live in the moment, be in the moment, and enjoy yourself. And then once you're done with that moment, move on to the next moment. You get done with the game, go enjoy your family, go hang out with the guys for a little bit, like get your mind as far off of that as possible. And that's what I've gotten pretty good at, is being able to mentally be there for each and every single thing, like with everything. So if I'm going out, I'm playing hockey, I'm 100% in hockey. I'm mentally, I'm not really thinking about much else. And then when I'm outside hockey, when I'm outside of the rink, you won't hear me talking about hockey. Like, I'm doing everything I possibly can to get my mind off hockey, whether that's hanging out with my family, hanging out with my wife, my dogs, and obviously my baby now.
Yeah.
But I think having that like kind of break from the rink, I think is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. You have any other hobbies outside of hockey?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I play golf.
Nice.
I'm
a terrible golfer.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a great golfer, but but for me, it, like being out there is, it's kind of just escape from everyday life.
Yeah.
Which is, I do that. I play video games, just anything really I can do to get my mind off of and let my mind wander for a little bit is good for me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for I guess for, you know, people listening, what do you think sort of the biggest misconception among young goaltenders and parents and coaches in terms of what they think of the NHL level, or what they think it's about, or what they think they know, they understand?
Biggest misconception. I think one of the biggest things that I've seen is, like, when you grow up, the only thing that matters is you stopping the puck. So I think as you're growing up and you have these goalie coaches telling you to do a certain thing that you might not feel comfortable doing, like for instance, like the RVH nowadays, some goalies can definitely do that a ton. And some kids, like young kids, will watch like Vasilevsky or even like Jonathan Quick when I was in college was huge. And then some coaches, they see these goalies doing it in the NHL, so they think that everyone has to do that.
Right.
But, like, I can't do an RVH. My body doesn't do half the things that Jonathan Quick and Andrew Vasilevsky do.
So, like, freaking nature, man.
Yeah. So, like, I'll try it and I'll test it out. But really, like, you know what you have to do, and like with the technical aspects of hockey, you know how you can be at your best. So I'm not going to go out and I'm not going to do these moves that they're doing, because I just can't. Like, I just can't do it. And I think finding that, and that's what George does really well, is he finds like the strengths of your game and he hammers those home, because that's going to be your foundation. And then obviously those weaknesses, like, yeah, you can work on them, a ton, but those strengths are always what you're going to go back on.
Figure out what your identity is really and double down on those things, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think you should hammer those away way more than, like, obviously you work on your weaknesses, you get better at them, to make them pretty much not a weakness anymore. But
yeah,
those strengths, I think if you hammer those down and get pretty much to perfection on those, I think that's way smarter than trying to adapt to what someone else is doing.
Yeah, for real. I mean, there's so much out there now. There's so much information, like even just with social media alone. I mean, so many coaches and you really got to kind of, you know, test things, figure out what works for you and your identity and kind of be in pursuit of that. And when you find it, you know, don't be so in a rush to go chase the shiny object, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I at one point, you got to embrace the grind.
Yeah.
Like, embrace it, enjoy it, and have fun with it, because it's not easy moving up levels in hockey with how political and how much people, like, pretty much you have your whole career is in the hands of someone else.
Yeah, for sure.
So you gotta make the most of every opportunity you got, and if what's the point of doing that if you're not gonna have fun with it?
Yeah, no kidding. And kind of on that note, I want to dive a bit into your routines finally here.
Yeah.
So on and off the ice, but you know, we'll start with sort of playing in big games and playing when the stakes are high and there's pressure, like you said, taking advantage of opportunity, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's sort of like your mental routine like during a game to help you avoid game time and performance anxiety, and kind of when you get high, like, you know, too high or too low, is there something that you like say, like an anchor technique, either like internally or externally, that you use to center yourself again?
Yeah, I've used a lot of breathing techniques.
Okay, cool.
Whether it's these techniques come from, like, they're all military stuff, like box breathing. So you breathe in for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, hold it for mm-hmm. 4 seconds, and repeat it. And naturally, I want to say it's in like 5 minutes, naturally your body will produce these endorphins to calm yourself down.
Mm.
And I think that's huge if you get into that point where you're feeling a little bit too high.
Yeah.
But I think another thing that I've talked to our sports psych about is, so on a scale of 1 to 10, find that number that you think you are the most effective on the ice. Like when you're at the top of your game, look back on like some of the top games that you've played, what number are you from 1 to 10? And when I did that, my number was right in the middle, 5.
Mm.
So then having that baseline before games, you think back and say, oh, maybe I'm a little bit like too jittery. Maybe I'm at a 7. And so you need to bring yourself back down to that 5, or maybe I'm at a 2, I'm tired or just like not feeling it today. And then you find something to, whether it's music or getting up, going for a jog or doing something like that, you find yourself to get yourself back to that 5. And like some people are different. There might be a guy who feels like he's at his best when he's a 10.
Yeah.
Which would be crazy to me, but
there's off the rails.
Yeah. Some people are like that. So if you do that, like, you need to have that. And I go back to like the self, just knowing yourself and knowing when you are at the top of your game and getting to that point. That's probably like the biggest thing that I've done. But like on game days for big games, like I said, I usually, what I do is I go in for pregame skate and I'm like fully there for pregame skate. I go back and then I get my mind off of hockey for like
the day
until I have to leave for the rink again.
Yeah, I'm the same.
So like I don't even think about hockey whatsoever, because that's when I start getting jittery and I start thinking about like, what if I let this goal in, or what if this happens?
Yeah.
Whereas if I get my mind off of it, I'm not like physically, I can't think about that. So it helps me. That helps me out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then your post goal routine, you know, like what's that process? Like when you get scored on, do you have like a set process that you go through?
Sometimes, during games, I'm a big believer in, like, it's kind of like the same thing where I find those moments like in between a whistle or something like that. And I'll just like look into the crowd or something like that, or look for something like funny in the crowd to kind of like make myself laugh.
That's sick. Yeah. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, so like I'll be looking up at the Jumbotron and looking at for different things that'll just like make me laugh, like when the play's not going on. That kind of keeps me in. But for games, I look at each period differently, and I crack those period, those 20-minute periods, into 4 5-minute intervals. So when the game starts, I'm thinking like I'm pretty much playing 4 different games every single period. So I'm playing 12 5-minute games throughout the game.
Yeah.
So the game starts, I'm just worried about getting to that 15-minute mark. And if a goal goes in that 15-minute mark, you know what? screw it. It's 0-0 now. On to the next game.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
Or
right.
If you're up 3-0, like, you know what? I still want to win this next game.
Right. Right.
And that kind of helps
you bring you to the moment, right? Be present.
Exactly. Yeah. That it helps you play more in the moment and stop worrying about the results so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And then during the week, you know, for on or off ice, what are like maybe your two biggest hacks that you have for like drill or off ice exercises or something that, you know, like if you do this, you're going to be set for the weekend? Kind of like I think everybody has some type of modality that they really lean on. That's a part of their weekly routine, right?
Yeah. I think for on the ice, I think it's those repetitions. That's something I've kept with me going into pro. So I like every time we're going out and we have a few days before games, like we'll just go out and hammer down repetitions just to get that confidence back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's huge for me. Off the ice, I wouldn't say there's necessarily one strong thing that I necessarily do, especially like during the season. I mean, obviously you get to your stretching, do all that stuff. But I have this, it's called a Theragun.
And yeah.
What I do during the season is I like before bed, I'll just sit down on the couch for 30 minutes and I'll just gun my muscles out, whatever sore that day, just to make sure. But off the ice, other than that, I wouldn't say I do anything necessarily in particular. It's a ever changing thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's constantly adapting, obviously, right?
Yeah. Like if I know that I'm not there, something that helped me a week ago might not help me that week. So it's just it's always finding that one thing. And it, like I said, it changes, and that's just how I am. Like, you might be different. You might have that one thing that you need to do every single time. But like, I'm not you. I'm different than you. So like, I need to find that at that point. Like, what is that helps me, you know?
No, for sure. Everybody's got to be kind of in the pursuit to really like solve themselves, solve your body, solve your mind. And you know, people say, you know, goalies are weird, but it's really like you just really don't know like what clicks with you and how and why. But when you find that, like, don't let anybody let you shy away from that. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And I mean, I agree. I do think goalies are weird. We are a weird breed.
Comes with the territory.
Yeah. Like we get rubber puck shot at us at 100 miles an hour. Like, you got to have a little bit of a screw loose. But it also makes us very interesting individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. Very unique. You got to treat it as such, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Finally, I'm just curious, maybe you can kind of detail the biggest adversity you ever faced in your career, like what you learned from it and how you overcame it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest adversity that I've faced in my hockey career is definitely getting cut from college, because it wasn't at a really young age where I had a lot of like opportunity after that.
Right.
So like, yes, I was young. I wasn't in pro at that point, but like, if you get cut from a team when you're 13 years old, like, you still got a while to go.
Yeah.
Bring it back up. Like, this is college. Like, some kids don't play past college. So this was like, that was tough. And my biggest advice there is just, like I said, it's just chase your dreams and never let go of your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And work as hard as possible to make those dreams happen. And don't let anything stand in your way, no matter what it is.
Yeah, man.
Like, always chase those dreams, always have fun with it, and always enjoy it. That's my biggest thing that I could say.
Mm-hmm.
Always, like I said, stay in the moment. I'm a big harper on staying in the moment, because I think when you're in the moment, that's when you're mentally and physically at your best.
Yeah. Yeah, right on, man. Well, you have any last words of advice for everyone listening that you feel passionate about sharing other than that?
No, I think we covered most of it.
No, we did. It was a great interview, man. And obviously, thank you so much for coming on, buddy. I appreciate your insight into you know, what it takes to really be not just be a pro goaltender, but a winning one. And so often in almost every goalie's journey, you're going to face adversity. And I love the stories where, you know, it really forges you, it molds you, that adversity and your willingness to overcome it really turns you into the character you have and the goalie you are, right?
Yeah. So quick combo here real quick. Were you at Vermont when Micheletto was there?
No, I think they got fired from Vermont, and then the new guys that they brought in, they were the ones who committed me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then they went to UMass, and then those are the guys I think that committed you and that were with you, right?
Yeah.
Oh. But I don't remember if you and I played each other when you were at UMass. Did we ever play each other?
I don't think so. I think Mador, was it Mador? Rob?
He was before my time, yeah.
And then I remember playing against you at Lowell, where it was you and who was the other guy? Hoffman?
Hoffman was, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. We played you guys in the garden, too.
Yeah, it was a dogfight every time we played you guys, man.
Yeah. Just pure defensive game. One all the time.
Yeah, no, but no, good times, man. It was great watching you play, and obviously congrats on all the success, and I wish you the best of luck and everything going forward, man. You know, can you just let people know where they can get in touch with you online?
Yeah, so Twitter is Boyle33, I believe. Instagram at Boyle530. I think that's pretty much it.
Boyle530. All right, man. Well, go check out Kevin Boyle. Send him a follow. Give him a tweet. Send him a DM. I'm sure he'd be willing to answer your questions if anybody listening wants to connect with him further. But you know, he's experienced tons of success at the next level for years now. And I know there's something there today for everybody listening that you guys can take out of this that'll help you in your journey. So you know, maybe somewhere down the road we'll have you back on the show, man, if that's something that interests you.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to. Like I said, I got stories that we could talk about for hours. Anytime you want me, I'm here. I'm available.
All right. Well, cheers, man. I'm grateful for you coming on, buddy. Good luck as the season gets underway soon. Take care, stay safe, and we'll chat soon, man.
Appreciate it, brother. Best of luck to you as well.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, guys. If you like what you heard today, make sure to hit that subscribe button, as we have tons of amazing guests lined up already to come on to the show in the next few months. And make sure to tune in next week and every Tuesday from now on at 8 a.m., as next week I have a leader in the Canadian Junior goaltending coaching space, RBC, Western Canada Cup, and AJHL champion, and now the goalie coach for the Medicine Hat Tigers in the WHL, Matt Wong. And Matt just has a tons of experience winning at the Tier 2 Junior A level. He has an awesome approach to the game. Loved having a conversation with him. It was a pleasure having him on. And I know you guys are going to love this one, so make sure to tune back next week. Without further ado, here are the giveaway details for our monthly giveaway we do for the Goalie Hacks podcast. And just as a note here, if you enter into this giveaway, even if you don't win, we select four winners a month, and that includes books, different products, training products, NeuroTracker subscriptions. We give away all sorts of things. We pick four people a month. And even if you don't win 1 month, you're always entered into the future giveaway. So to enter the giveaway, if you're an Apple user, simply go to the Apple Podcast app on your phone and leave us a written review and rating. And if you're an Android user, you can also download iTunes onto your computer and leave a review and rating on there as well. And once you leave a review of the podcast, just take a screenshot of it and either email it to goaliehacks@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram with your screenshot and your full name. Get excited, guys. Great things ahead. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I'll see you next week.